Blog Talk Radio.
We are the UR Tennis Network. Our mission is to be the voice of tennis. We enlist a team of passionate enthusiasts to promote our sport. We strive to bring interesting perspectives on the many spins of tennis. Our goal is to provide the learners of our sport with current news and information from many angles. We seek active participation from communities interested in tennis, but tennis is not interested in them. We are expanding our outreach. Tennis is a true lifetime sport that needs to be talked about, and the UR Tennis Network pledges to pursue this idea relentlessly.
Hello, hello, and welcome to Infinite Tennis. I'm your host, Bill Patton. What is Infinite Tennis? Infinite Tennis is the self-taught kid who plays with two hands on both sides at the park with his T2000 knockoff frame, and then he ends up on the radio. Infinite Tennis is the inspiring improvement by players that no one gave a chance to succeed at a high level. Welcome to the show, everybody. I'm very excited about our guest, of course, Wayne Bryan. Wayne's bio you can see on the page. It's pretty long. He has done so many different things. True Renaissance man of tennis. So I think Wayne might also be a brain surgeon. I don't know if he listed that, but it's quite possible that he might be. The theme of today's show is going to highlight some of the things that I've learned and we can learn from Wayne. I think he brings so much great information. And I can honestly say that Wayne Bryan saved my tennis career. How? Well, we'll get into that in the two features, Play Tennis Today, or Play Better Today, and Where the Rubber Meets the Road. Okay, so it's time for Play Better Today. Today I want to focus on your volleys, because one of Wayne's very best presentations that he gives is on great doubles drills that involve a lot of volley. Right? Remember, when it comes to any advice given here, you need a coach. I mean, you're not gonna take this and put it into play. You need someone watching you, helping you out. Find the best coach you can afford. And if you're a kid and you can't afford coaching, have your parents apply for a grant through the USTA. There's money out there to help fund your development as a player. And a lot of it goes unused, so go for it. Okay, back to volleying. Perhaps the most important things that you can do on your volleys, one is to keep that racket approximately 45 degrees above your forearm. You know, people used to say racket above the wrist, but then, of course, if you have to go low for a ball, then the racket technically is not above your wrist. But maintaining that racket angle is very important. And John Yandell, though, pointed out one time that when you have to go full stretch on a volley, then that's the only time you want your arm completely stretched out with no angle. All right. So maintain that angle. Another one is to make sure that you're keeping your hand in its natural position while you're doing this. If you're tweaking your hand or your wrist, then there's a little breakdown that's going to happen in your stroke there. You're going to have some moments of weakness. So find that really strong hand position. Second of all, vision is even more important than that, perhaps, than for ground stroking, and you need to see that ball come out of your opponent's racket. It's amazing how much more quickly you can react and predict the flight of the ball if you see that moment of contact from your opponent. I say all the time, and then you know, another important thing is that you need to prepare your frame with your shoulders. Get that racket off the side by turning your shoulders. Many times with less accomplished volleyers, my advice to them is to use more shoulders and less hands. When your hands start getting really busy in your volleys, then you can be sure you're going to be tossing in a few more errors than you need to. So just be really solid on that. We're gonna let Wayne go off on that a little bit more, I'm sure. So, Another important thing is play a lot of doubles. If you want to become a better volleyer and you've been playing exclusively singles, why not play the game that starts you off at the net for about one half of the of each game? So get in there, use it or lose it. And now here's a little homework for you. Go on YouTube and put in your little search thing, Mike and Bob Bryan forehand volley on the APAS system. I'll say it again. Mike and Bob Bryan forehand volley on the APAS system. And that's an incredible thing done by Vic Braden and his people. Mr. Frizzell is involved in that. All right? So keep in mind, those are world-class volleyers that are doing that, and so you're not going to do that immediately. These are guys who spend, who will spend an entire hour working on one shot. I saw them practicing at the U.S. Open one time. It was amazing the attention to detail that they put into that. All right, so you're going to play better today if you keep that good racket angle, see the ball come out of the opponent's strings, and turn your shoulders. All right? Make sure you get some coaching on that. All right, so we're going to go to a special message here, and then when we come back, we're going to do Where the Rubber Meets the Road, and then we're going to meet our guest, Wayne Bryan. You're in for a treat.
Alternative Lighting and Power is a renewable energy solutions-focused company with an emphasis in helping athletic facilities. We would like to upgrade your tennis complex to the 21st century. We offer a range of services that will upgrade your tennis complex. We can use our technology to make your facility virtually disappear from the energy grid. We can provide lights, scoreboards, scoring systems, cooling systems, heating systems, camera systems, covered seating areas, wastewater management, and even new buildings. Our company is located in Houston, Texas, but we provide services to all 50 states and internationally. We would love to visit with you about our opportunities. Please contact Ed Love at 832-549-4193 or email at elove@alternativel-p.com. You can also visit our website at www.alternativel-p.com. We are the sunny side of business.
That's terrific. And yeah, if you care about your club and you really want the very best, that sounds like a great thing to look into. Okay, where the rubber meets the road. A phrase I stole from Jim Lehrer is enjoy the competition. So, yes, we're going to talk about fun. After developing a commitment to a high effort level in your game, probably the second most important thing you can do is for the foundation of your mental game is to focus on fun. All right, so here we go. Let's get logical for a second, all right? Tennis is a sport. Sports are games. Games are something you play. Playing is fun. You know, and everyone agrees with that, but no. Now, go to a country where they sell this line of thinking. Tennis is a sport. Sports are competition. Competition has winners and losers. If you win, you're a winner, and if you lose, you're a loser. Winners are superior people to losers. That's obvious. But and so if we've been buying into that or into what they're selling when they say that, or if we're selling it to ourselves, then we need to get out of that market. Having quit tennis 10 times myself and come back to it, you know, I've realized that I needed to get back to love of the game. When Wayne came out and spoke to us in NorCal in the mid-90s and was giving this message of fun, 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 it really changed my approach to my own play and the way I coach. And, you know, the rest is really history. I mean, it really helped me to get my teams to play great and not feel so much pressure, and then they were able to succeed at a higher level because they're just out there for the fun of the competition. So very, very important. You know, one thing that happened there also is that as I was transitioning from being exclusively a singles player to now needing to play some doubles because I'd had knee surgery, I began looking for a doubles partner, and I found the guy that I thought would be the most fun. And we had a very nice 4-year partnership there. So that's where the rubber meets the road, is make enjoyment and the fun of your game, make that a rock-solid foundational part of how you play. All right, so let's see if we have Wayne on the phone here. Hello, Wayne, are you there?
Yeah, Bill, I'm here. You sound great. You sound better than me. Why don't you just keep talking, and I'll go out and hit some balls.
Okay, everybody, the Wayne Bryan show has been canceled by Wayne. He's got to go play some tennis. Yeah, that's not going to happen. No, you know what? I think right now everybody's been already itching, or they already advanced it to the 10-minute mark just to get to you, and that's I'm glad about that. So
I'm glad I had that impact on you with that talk. I don't remember giving the talk. But I've been in NorCal and spoken many times, and I'm glad that it had an impact. And, of course, I 100% agree with what you're saying. I think, really, Vic Braden was the father of fun, and I got so much of my stuff from him, and I think he's one of the great people in the world. But it really has to be fun. Cyndi Lauper saying girls just want to have fun. I've found that boys just want to have fun, too, and parents just want to have fun, and children, and grandparents, and, you know, even dogs and horses, I have discovered, like to have fun and like to play. So it's a huge key. Dr. Ellen Langer, a great psychologist, the head of the department there at Harvard, has written extensively about this, and she does it from the Ivy Tower, and I do it from the street.
That's great. Okay, so I want to do a little shout out to some of my students, and so I want you to speak directly to them. So there's going to be Alicia, Precia, Christopher, Ethan, Connor, and Aaron. What advice would you give these kids about the balance of fun and hard work?
Well, you can get to hard work through fun. If you run to the court each day and can't wait to get out there and do the drills and games that you're going to do with your great coaches, and you love the kids that you practice with, and you enjoy the kids at the tournament, I mean, it's nothing but fun. I mean, this is the greatest sport you can possibly play, tennis. Doesn't matter how big you are, how strong you are, what a great athlete you are, or how smart you are, or anything. It's just a blast to go out and hit balls. I also think music is a heck of a lot of fun. Anybody who doesn't play tennis and music, I feel sorry for them. Is there pressure? Oh, sure. Can you get knocked down on your butt by mother tennis? Of course you can. All the time that happens. But you also have the exhilaration of the wins. It's a roller coaster ride. You like roller coaster rides? Play tennis. You got your ups, you got your downs, but you can have no greater joy than playing the great game of tennis.
Absolutely. So was there a time before for you, I mean, where you had your epiphany and you said, this is no fun and now I'm going to have fun? Was there ever a time you weren't having fun?
You know, everything I do in life since I was a little tiny boy, you know, has always been fun. I mean, did some teachers and coaches work at making it drudgery for me? Yes, they did. Sometimes they succeeded, but I always tried to break out away from that and get pure enjoyment. I can give you a lot of stories. I mean, look, every loss is heartbreaking and gut-wrenching. You lose at the club on Saturday morning in your men's doubles. That doesn't feel good. You know, things aren't quite as funny the rest of the day, and you don't have quite as big a smile the rest of the day. But, you know, it's all in the game, all in the wonderful game, as Tommy Edwards sang. I look at UCLA this week. What a season they've had. The Bruin men team, coached by the great Billy Martin, assistant coach Grant Chin, 29-2. They won the Pac-10 championship, number one ranked team in the country. Haven't won the NCAA since 2005. Gosh, they run a great program. They coach well. They get people out. They get the band out. I can't admire the UCLA men's tennis program and Billy Martin more. What happens? They go to the NCAAs. They host a regional. They win their regional. They go to the NCAAs back in Illinois, win the first match, second match, third match. They're in the finals now. They've beaten Ohio State and, you know, all kind of great teams. They're in the finals against Virginia. They're down 3-1. They bring it back to 3-2, 3-all. They're in the final. Final match, 3-all. They got a player out there. He's up 5-3. He's up 40-30. Plays a darn good point. Hits a great volley. The guy's off the court, puts up a little blooper volley. The player comes forward to hit the volley, knocks off a winning volley. What happened? His toe tipped the very bottom of the net. So lightly that the net didn't even move. I've seen the video replay 10 times over and over. And the umpire said, boom, UCLA loses the point, player touched net, which was the correct call, and he's got to make it. You could debate this for hours whether that's the right thing to do or not. I think it is. What happens? Yeah. Lose the point, lose the game, lose the set, lose the match. UCLA, which had basically had their arms all around that trophy, lost. Can you imagine how heartbreaking it was for that player? Can you imagine how heartbreaking it was for Billy and the UCLA fans and the other teammates? Gut-wrenching, terrible. What does Billy Martin do? Takes it like a man, makes one of the greatest post-match speeches I've ever heard. In fact, I blasted it off all over the country to everybody who listens to what I say. He was so elegant and classy in defeat, said that was the correct call, we'll get over it. You got to congratulate the other player. You got to congratulate Virginia. I mean, this is what makes tennis great. In a seemingly hideous occurrence, there's greatness in taking the loss so well. This is what makes our sport great. I'm happy for Virginia. Goodness knows they've had some heartbreaking losses the last 3 or 4 years, but they've been the number one seed themselves. And now they stayed with it, and they won. And that's a great thing about our sport. Yes, there's the agony of defeat, but there's the thrill of victory. As Kevin Garnett said to LeBron James in 2010, when his Boston Celtics upset the number 2 seed Cleveland Cavaliers, at the end of the thing, LeBron was so dejected. And Kevin Garnett put his arms around him, looked him in the eye, and said, "You have to go through a lot of nightmares before you reach their dreams." So even in this tough situation, it's a good experience.
We need to go to a commercial so that we can come back to the dreams in a moment. So we're going to have to take a quick break here, Wayne, but I'll be right back to you. We got to run this little ad here, and I'll be back to you in 45 seconds, okay?
No problem.
Excellent.
This is Jason Haynes, CEO of the UR Tennis Network. We are proud to announce the 2013 summer camp season has begun. At ussportcamps.com, you can plan out a Nike tennis camp experience. These are offered to both adults and juniors for day and overnight camps. Visit ussportcamps.com to pick up a brochure and join over 50,000 youth who say yes to our summer camp experience. Join a Nike tennis camp at www.ussportcamps.com or call us at 1-800-NIKE-CAMPS. In 2013, let our summer camps be your victory. Choose the Nike Tennis Camps and take your game to the next level.
Okay. So, hey, thanks for that story. That was fantastic. And that's maybe the tennis story of 2013 so far. But we're going to take another question. John T. from Mountain View, you know, they have a lot of techno geeks down there. He wants to know, what is your favorite piece of technology that you use when you're out on the road to stay in touch with people?
Well, I don't have very high-tech stuff. I'm just an old email guy. I'm a phone guy. I can text a little bit, and the boys made me get an iPhone, which I can use reasonably well. But I'm no techno monster. You know, the owner of the Sacramento Capitals, DePaul Wanakawadi, who was a former Sri Lankan Davis Cupper and a great tennis guy and a great guy, he doesn't use any technology. He doesn't even know how to email or text. bless his heart, one of the greatest guys I ever met and one of the wealthiest guys I've ever met, very successful in business. He does everything right in person and up front, and he's done pretty dadgum well with that approach.
Wow. So he has his people send the text. That's what's going on there.
Exactly. So his wife sort of does it when he has to text or he has to email Betsy, and good for her for doing it. But this is one grand guy. And I want to encourage everybody to come out to the Sacramento Capitals this summer. We play in July. Marty Fish is playing. Kevin Anderson, Mark Knowles, Sam Querrey. We got this young star, Taylor Townsend, the number one junior in the world. Very exciting player and a great doubles player named Megan Moulton-Levy, who was an NCAA finalist.
That's great. Hey, let's talk for a brief moment because we've got about 10 minutes of live air left, and then we're going to go into the podcast. So when that happens, then we'll kind of wrap up a little, and then we'll wait for a moment for that recording to start. We're going to go as long as you want to go. I mean, I got a full hour here, but in terms of the 10 and under mandate, and I want to frame this as positively as possible, it's kind of a two-part question. What do you like about the transition balls, and what advice would you give to decision makers from the USTA to corporate tennis giants in developing the pathway for juniors?
Getting right into politics. I love it. look, I'm a huge believer in graduated learning. I write about it in my book. I've used it in music, certainly.
Yeah.
When the boys were first playing drums as 3 years old, you lower the drum stool, you make little adjustments in the drums, you get a small keyboard.
Hello? Are you still there?
Hello, yes.
Hello, yeah, I did something technical that I think made you silent for a second, but we're back.
Sorry.
Wayne?
No, you don't have Wayne. This is my name's Mark Elliott. I called in to say a hey to Wayne.
Hey, thanks, Mark. Hey. How you doing? And thanks for interrupting me, old pal.
Well, you know, Wayne, sometimes when you get on stage, you do like to make us all enjoy the moment.
Oh, you're the best. We've had a lot of great times, and we've played a lot of great matches against each other, too. You were a great player for San Jose State, and I hope our paths will cross this summer.
Well, thanks, Wayne. I just wanted to shout out a quick hi and wish you good luck.
Thanks.
I
hope to see you soon, Mark.
Kids.
But anyway, what I was saying to the listeners, Bill, is I'm a big believer in graduated learning. I don't think you start anything at 10. I think you start at 1. You know, have balls in the crib floating around and all kind of hold a little racket handle when you're 6 months old. But as soon as you can walk, start pushing the ball around. You don't go out on a court and have Mike and Bob Bryan serve balls at you when you're 1 year old. You walk it up slow. You walk it up in all kind of fun ways. Again, I've used balloons and Nerf balls and every kind of modality known to man. I have more than you can even imagine, more than even the balls they have on the market. I have all kind of crazy stuff that I've used. So obviously, various ball sizes, I'm all for it. Various racket sizes, I'm all for it. Various court sizes, I'm all for it. And the same with music, dance, theater, speaking, and marine biology. You got to walk it up. Surfers in Hawaii, they don't put a five-year-old kid on a 25-foot wave. He rides a boogie board in a one-foot wave on shore. The greatest rodeo stars ride little ponies when they're little kids. They don't ride a bucking bronco when they're two. I mean, I get all that, and I 100% am for graduated learning. I'm a devotee. I'm an apostle for graduated learning. Comma, but I do not believe in mandating that every top 10 and under player in the United States must use a green soft tennis ball. And if you listen to my pal Dick Gould, who I admire more than any man on planet Earth, he's one of the great coaches, leaders, and fabulous human beings there are. His success is he's the greatest coach college ever. Can't love him more. If you listen to his 11-minute answer on this, which I have, he's all for graduated learning too. He's excited about it, comma, but he also feels there should be a pathway for 9- and 10-year-old kids that want to play with regulation tennis balls. All I'm saying is give peace a chance. Let's have a dual approach. For those that want to play softballs and the coaches that believe in it and parents, play the softball your whole life. I'm not going to go out and arrest a 50-year-old. They're out playing with a green ball. If they're having fun, that's fine with me. But don't mandate that a young 9- and 10-year-old player like J.C. Roddick in San Antonio, Texas, is not allowed to play tennis in Texas unless he plays with a softball. The kid's been playing since he was 6. His grandmother Blanche said he's better than Andy at this age by far. And he's been sitting outside the fence for 4 years because Texas won't let him play. This is wrong. This is sad. This is silly. This is stupid. There must be a dual approach. Ask Carol Solomon. Ask Chuck Creasy. Ask J.P. Weber. Ask Chris Boyer. Ask Steve Bellamy. Ask Mark Bay. Ask me. Ask Vic Braden. Ask Robert Lansdorf. Ask Rick Macy. Ask anybody in the country. They'll all tell you.
So, hey, Wayne, let me tell you something because we got about 3 more minutes of live air, and I want to get your reaction to this. Kurt Camperman was gracious enough to spend 45 minutes on the phone with me on
Wednesday. Kurt's a great pal of mine. He's a brilliant guy, does a lot for tennis. Can't like him more. He does a great Elvis.
I'm halfway done with my statement there. And then he mentioned that coming up in Boca, they're going to have a tournament with elite juniors that feature both the regular balls and the green dot ball, and it's going to be something on display so that people can see the different quality of matches. And so my plan, and I think the plan of some other local pros here, is to have some dual tournaments where you have yellow ball and green ball at the same tournament. And the proof is in the pudding, right?
There's no question the proof is in the pudding, and it's what the kids want. They're voting with their feet. Little Mo offers it. The Andy Roddick tournaments in Texas offer it. You can choose. What are the kids choosing overwhelmingly? The yellow tennis ball. If the kids overwhelmingly choose the green ball in some state, give it to them. Give them what they want and what they want to sign up for, but don't mandate and require, especially something so radical. Now, I hope my pal Kurt doesn't go down there and tweak the filming and show only the best points of the green and the worst points of the yellow. I mean, nobody's that right and that sanctimonious that can tell kids precisely what ball they have to do. Leave it to the coaches, the parents, and the kids. Have a dual approach and let the marketplace decide.
Well, you know what he said was that if there was a large event that was hosting both of these, that he and Patrick McEnroe would come.
And well, I'm glad to see Pat get out of the office. You know, he doesn't get out of the office too often or leave his home only to do TV. And if he's going to go out and watch the tournaments, I say great. Hey, Pat's a great pal of mine. He's a great guy. He was a great player. He was a great Davis Cup coach of my boys. Can't like Pat Moore. I disagree with he and Kurt on this one issue. I think it's hurting tennis big time.
Yeah. You know, I can't agree more with you on that. And I want to hear the voice of the people who are really for this, and so that they can answer questions to me, like, for instance, the extreme variance in quality of the balls. Because I've encountered 2 brands of red balls that one ball just does not bounce, and then the other one bounces so erratically that I got kids giving me the stink eye when I toss them the ball. You know,
yeah, there's so many balls and so many sizes and courts and things that we don't have that many kids playing that we can have this many balls, you know? I just did a clinic over at Westlake a couple of weeks ago, and there was 32 kids, a dog, 9 parents, and 3 coaches. What am I going to do? Say, all right, you 6-year-old, use this color, 7-year-old, use that. Hey, there's not that many kids to do it. We just played with yellow balls. We had a great time. Took 75 kids to Boise. We used one yellow ball, all different. We had a great time. It works.
10 seconds left. So thank you, live listeners, for tuning in. Wayne, for being on Live Air. In about 5 seconds here, we're going to be in the podcast. 3, 2, 1. And thank you for coming out. All right, so right now the live show is over and we're in the podcast. And you know, thanks for those answers on that. Let's move forward on to some other stuff that I think we covered that pretty darn well. So what's coming up for you besides the obvious? You know, you got the French Open and Wimbledon coming up. What's next on the plate for Wayne Bryan?
Well, after the French and Queens and Wimbledon, I'm fired up for our World Team Tennis season in July, most of the month of July. I just love coaching Sacramento. It'll be my 12th season. I have a great owner in DePaul, Wanakawati. We have a great new general manager, Coco McNamee. I love my players. Mark Knowles has been with me for 12 years, one of the greatest doubles players to ever play. Other players we have, Sam Querrey, a great U.S. player. Kevin Anderson has improved like crazy this fall and this spring. He's playing fabulous tennis. Marty Fish, a longtime pal, been as high as 8 in the world. I'm really excited to be working with this young player, Taylor Townsend, who's the number one junior in the world. I talked to her a little bit in Indian Wells and know her mom, great gal. And she's got a great future ahead of her. I work with our doubles player, Megan Moulton-Levy. She was the NCAA finals out of William & Mary a couple of years ago. She's up to about 70 in the world in doubles. She plays fabulous doubles, and I really enjoyed working with her, and it's going to be great having her on the team. I would encourage anybody who loves the great game of tennis to come out and watch World Team Tennis. Tickets are reasonably priced. We play at the Sunrise Mall in Sacramento. We have a beautiful stadium that seats about 3,000. Every seat is fantastic. We have men's singles, women's singles, men's doubles, women's doubles, mixed doubles, music, on-court coaching, team uniforms. I mean, it's an absolute blast. And if you don't have a ball, I'll refund your money on the spot and take you out for dinner right after the match. I encourage every coach and parent to come and bring their kids. We start at 7:30 each night. We have 7 home matches in July. Go onto our Sacramento Capitals website and come on out, and you'll have an absolute blast. Let me just say this, Bill, not about World Team Tennis, but about anything. Champions take it in through their eyes and not their ears. You must see it before you can dream it, and you must be passionate about it before you can achieve it. You want your child to be a player? Don't tell them to play. Take them to a motivational tennis event. Not only World Team Tennis, how about going to see Stanford play, or Cal, or St. Mary's, or Santa Clara, any of the great teams you have there in Northern Cal, or all across the nation. You go to a college match, that 8 or 9-year-old is going to be fired up, A, to go to college, and B, to play college tennis. The best thing coaches and parents can do is not tell their kids to play, but show them how great this sport can be. Motivational tennis events, college, pros, World Team Tennis. If you don't remember anything about what I said this morning, do that, and tennis will be another mile down the road.
That's great. Hey, you know, I want to follow up on World Team Tennis, and especially Mark Knowles, because I love taking my people to go see World Team Tennis, specifically for Mark, because, as you know, when people watch doubles, what do they look at? They look at the big shot, the big volley that won the point. But what I show them is, I show them, do you see how Mark Knowles came forward and hit that little softy that floated down there low, and then the other team had no choice but to hit it back up. And then they crushed it. I mean, is he not the master of setting his partner up and himself up by setting the table there?
Well, that's just well spoken, Bill, and I 100% agree. Mark Knowles is one of the all-time great doubles players. And players would be smart, and most club players play doubles, to come out and watch the doubles. And you're right, don't just watch the ball go back and forth. Isolate on a player like Mark Knowles. Watch how he positions himself. Watch the shot he hits. Watch the court he covers. Watch what he takes away and what he leaves open. What he makes you think is open and then takes it away. Every night that I watch Mark Knowles, I see a new act. And on July 17th, the Bryan brothers are coming into town playing for Dallas to play against us. and Mark Knowles and probably Sam Querrey. What an incredible match that'll be. I think Mike and Bob have had the pleasure of competing against Mark Knowles some 40 times in their career.
Wow.
And they've always had incredible matches. When you watch them on the court, or a Danny Nestor, or a Mark Woodford, or Leander Pace and Mahesh Bhupathi, you're seeing some astonishing doubles. I think doubles are more exciting than singles. The points are crazy. Always, to me, the best points of the U.S. Open are the doubles points. Thank goodness they're putting a few of the boys' points in there these days. But crazy things happen on the doubles court. And thank you for pointing that out. And thanks for bringing your people out to World Team Tennis. And I bet when they go back to your club or courts the next day, they play better and they're more fired up for tennis than they've ever been, having watched it. You watch tennis at the top level, and you somehow magically improve.
Okay, let's go to the next thing here. So who were your tennis influences in the Giants in your game? Who was there a coach that kind of got a hold of you and molded you?
Well, that's a fabulous question, and here's the story, and I've told it repeatedly. My dad was a vice president of Western Airlines. One night he comes home, my brother and I was 10, my brother was 9. He says, "Hey, we got some free tickets. We're sponsoring this tournament called the Adler Sox Invitational. We're presenting sponsor. We're going to go to the LA Tennis Club and watch pro tennis tonight." I said, "No way." My brother and I were basketball, baseball, football players. "We're not going to a tennis match." He said, "Yes, we are. My dad is tight. He's cheap." He said, "We got free tickets. We're gone." We put on our clothes. We went. Walk in. We had box seats. I'm sitting in the front row. I sit down, and there's a beautiful bronzed Inca god on the court right in front of me. He's at the net taking warm-up volleys. I'm probably 10 to 12 feet away. He reaches out to hit a forehand volley right in front of my face. Thwack! It was the most beautiful sound I've ever heard. It was the most beautiful athletic movement I've ever seen. This guy had so much charisma, athletic ability, and right then and there, I've been on a tennis court every day of my life since I saw Alex Almeida, the former Wimbledon champ in 1959, hit that forehand volley.
Wow.
I've come to know Alex through the years. He's a great guy. He's a great ambassador for tennis. What's the rest of the story? The rest of this Twilight Zone story is 3 or 4 years ago, the boys and I are doing a clinic in Maui for a couple hundred Hawaiian kids. And it was packed and it was rolling. We used a lot of courts, used a lot of local pros. There was one little 8-year-old boy running around, hitting some great shots, hustling, great athletic ability. A very tanned kid, and I, at the end of the workout, I got on the microphone like I'd done with Venus and Serena years before him. I said, "Who's the parent of this little guy right here?" Beautiful mom comes down after. I shake hands, say, "Hi, I'm Coach Bryant." She says, "I've got to tell you, Mike and Bob have been a really big influence on my son to play tennis. I think he plays because of them." I said, "Oh,
wow.
Great." And she said, "What's your name?" She said, "Amy Almeida." I said, "Is your dad Alex Almeida?" She said, "Yes." I go, and I started crying. I said, "You know, Alex
wow.
was the one that inspired me to play. And now you're telling me my boys are the ones that inspired your son here." And, you know,
wow,
again, the point is, it wasn't a coach who got me going. It was seeing one player, one time, get me fired up for the sport. That's why I'm so fanatical about having parents and coaches take kids to college matches or high school matches or world team tennis matches or pro matches to get them fired up for the great game. Good question.
That's terrific. So, okay, let's talk about volleying for a second. Alex Doty of Richmond would like to know, how can he become a rock-solid volleyer?
Well, I'd like to know how well he volleys now. I mean, is he a beginning volley, an intermediate volley? Is he a 5.0 volleyer? I mean, there's all kind of things you can say. But
he's a 3.5 singles player, and he'd like to be at the net, but he has volleys that are not 3.5.
Okay, what I would say is, number one, spend more time volleying. I guarantee you, he's hit 1,000 forehands for every volley that he's hit. The reason volleys aren't as good today, kids don't spend as much time on them. They don't play as much doubles. If you want to be a better volleyer, hit a lot of volleys in practice. You want to hit better overheads, hit more overheads in practice. You want to return better, work on your return, not just your forehand. You want to work on your high backhand volley, hit the shot. You want to work on a top spin, practice what you need and you'll be better. Now, what would I say to him? If he's a 3-point volley, 5 volley, what I would do is I'd get out there and I'd get real close to him and I would throw something really soft and easy to him up close and work on that technique. I'd check out his grips. Does he have a continental grip or slight grip changes, which is okay? I'd make sure that that's all squared away. I'd make sure that he doesn't take the racket back too soon. I'd let his hands be in and soft, and I'd get him, and I'm sitting here in my chair in my office doing this, I'd swivel him right and left and feel how he wants to turn the whole core. Don't disengage and take the racket back too early on the volley. That's what pros across this country say too much. They say take the racket back early on the volley. No, I say keep your hands in and have soft, easy turns. Then and only then do you strike the volley. But I would get him up close. You talk about graduated learning and various balls and various musical approaches, slow and easy. That's what I would do with him. I would see where he is. I believe in there's like 8 stages of learning. The first is understand it intellectually. Second is to be able to do it really easy out of a closely, easily fed ball. Then we'd back him up a little harder feed, and then I'd drill it, work it, stress it, put it in pressure, do it in games and practice matches, and then take it out the tournament. But I'd walk him up as fast as he could, you know, go. It might take a day. It might take a month. It might take a year. It might take 10 years. Why do Mike and Bob volley so well? Did they come out of the womb volleying like that? No. They hit a billion volleys. We practice it in every which way. We have some of the most creative drills I think you can possibly have on the volley. That's why they volley well, not because of talent or being born with it. If this 3.5 player wants to be better on his volley, I think his name is Alex, he's got to, you know, get after the volley, get up close, get comfortable. When you're comfortable with the volley, you'll want to volley. If you're scared up there, you don't want to get up there. Or if you're losing points all the time, you won't volley more. On the volley.
I have a lot of questions for you, let's go boom, boom, boom. All right, we're gonna go.
Okay.
We're gonna lots of questions, lots of quick answers, and
you got
and these we can knock out. All right.
By the way, quick answers are tough for me, but I'll do my best.
I know. I'm here for you.
That's all right. Don't worry. I'll do it fast. Go.
Yeah. So on the pro tours, who are your favorite players to interact with? And is there anyone who you might classify as surprisingly friendly?
You know something? All the guys on the tour are really friendly and really nice. They all do charity work. We got the greatest group of guys right now. I did a clinic with Roger Federer from Mercedes-Benz at the U.S. Open last year. We had a blast. He's a great guy. Nadal's a great guy. Andy Murray's a great guy. Mike and Bob Bryan. I love our American players. John Isner, he's so fun and so funny. It's amazing. Sam Querrey's like your next-door neighbor. Can't be a great. Mark Knowles, great pal. Every guy out there I like. Oh, I have my close pals and people I'm closer to, but I like them all. The women are terrific, too. I've known Venus and Serena since they were 6 and 8 years old. Azarenka I know well, Carolyn Wozniacki, on and on and on. We're blessed with having such great guys and gals on the tour. They're athletically amazing. The game has never been played better, and these people are good folks. They do their charity work, and you know what else? Each and every one of them are good sports. And I can't say that about some of the players way back in the day, but this group, great sports, great role models. I can't say enough. That's a quick answer.
Excellent. Let's talk about your boys. And let's go back to the beginning. Was there ever a time when they couldn't play each other?
Oh, sure. We never let them compete against each other in tournaments. Since they were 6 years old, they were getting the finals of junior tournaments. And by the way, that's one of the reasons I'm against requiring green softballs for young players. I mean, Mike and Bob's skill level was a joke when they were 6. To have them play with softballs, they would have been out of the sport. I mean, they were rolling. So we didn't have them compete against each other. Every time they'd get to a final, we'd have one default to the other because brothers are hyper-competitive. They're always competing for parental love and affection and all that. And it just doesn't work. I don't think husbands and wives should compete against each other, or brothers and sisters, or brothers. There's plenty of kids to play out there, thousands. They don't need to compete against each other. So they just took turns defaulting one to the other. Now a lot of parents have copied that practice, and I think it's healthy, and I think it's the only way to go.
That's interesting. I wouldn't have guessed that. Was there a time when...
Now, this isn't to say they didn't practice against each other all the time. We'd send them way up on court 16 because it got pretty brutal, and I would never let them tell me who won that particular match. I just wanted them competing.
Wayne, we're done with that question.
Okay.
I'm messing with you. Okay. Well, you know, I don't know if you remember this, but one time you came to NorCal and you were asking questions about what do you teach, and then I said something, and I guess you thought I was being a little too highbrow. So then you managed to just, you were railing on me the whole rest of the talk.
Oh, good. I'm glad to hear that.
It was the most hilarious. I mean, everybody was in stitches, and I was fine with it. But I just got to give you, you got to have a little get back on that one. But anyway, so let's move forward here. Was there a time when the boys, it looked like touch and go, like, hey, they might not go pro, they might not even be a college player? Was there kind of a pivotal time in their development when things weren't looking so great, but then they made a leap?
You know, people always ask that particular question this way. They say, are you surprised at the boys, what they did in the juniors, colleges, and the pros? And the answer is, truthfully, I'm not, because I knew the level of their passion. I mean, since they were 6 years old, they wanted to play at Stanford. Since they were 9 years old, they wanted to play Davis Cup for the United States and be number one in the world in doubles. I mean, their dreams were always in doubles because they loved playing the doubles, the twin brother angle and all that stuff. They admired Ricky Leach and the Woodies and all the great doubles teams throughout history. They loved watching it. We played a lot of doubles events at the club. And, you know, I love playing doubles. My wife is a good doubles player. We're really into that. So my wife always said when they were 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, people would say, do you think they'll be number one? Do you think they'll win the Grand Slam? Do you think they'll be Davis Cup and all? And my wife would always say, you know, if not them, who? Because nobody could love tennis more than they did and have these goals and dreams and practice by the hour and play tournaments each and every weekend. In fact, if we wanted to go on a family vacation at 8, they'd start crying. We don't want to miss Whittier. We don't want to go to the lake. You know, so we never went on a vacation. We took vacations at every tournament we went. But they practiced more than anybody could. They played more tournaments. They played doubles each and every week. They loved playing it. They had the goals and dreams. They went to a billion college matches, all kind of pro matches, 5 Davis Cups by the time they got to Stanford. They went to 200 college matches. They had, every step of the way, they made the right step, and they had always the passion. They never said, I don't like this sport. They never said, I'm burned out. They never say, we want to quit. 100% heading for the goal, running up the top of the mountain.
Thank you for that. You know, I don't know why this spurred on for me, but I remember playing a lot of tournaments all over Northern California and trying to turn that into a vacation. And the quirky little thing that I used to do is I would go to the town cemetery. So it's really an interesting thing to do. You go to a place, you see the cemetery, and then all of a sudden you look at the names on the headstones and they're the same names that are on the street signs. And you get a sense of history of that place. So it was a very interesting and sort of strange thing to do, but I'm okay with
that. I had a history professor at UC Santa Barbara where I went to college, and he did a lot of historical research by studying cemeteries. He got all kind of information out of that.
Hey, what do you know? All right, so let's talk about advice to parents and budding players, because, you know, the kids' passion, the boys' passion is what really drove that, but then we also see the other thing where the parents trying to be in charge or whatnot. What advice would you give to parents and budding players as they navigate the competitive world of tennis?
Well, thank you for that question. That's one of the most important questions I think you can ask. And I wrote a book about it because I got asked that question thousands of times a year. And my book is called Raising Your Child to Be a Champion in Athletics, Arts, and Academics. It's available on Tennis Warehouse. If you haven't read it, get it and read it. If you can't afford it, steal it or borrow money from Bill and get a copy, because it'll make your life better. You know, what are the keys to helping your child remit? You're right. You can't tell them to be a player. You can't say get out there and practice. In fact, if you do, they're not going to want to do it. I say there's two keys. I mean, the book is, you know, got 20-some chapters, but there's two key chapters, chapter 3 and 4. Chapter 3, we talked about it at the top of the show. You got to make it fun. People who are having fun will learn faster. They'll retain more. They'll want to do it the next day. Fun is crucial and critical. Again, Cyndi Lauper, fun, fun, fun. Girls just want to have fun. The Beach Boys, fun, fun, fun. What's the other thing besides making it fun? And it's not that easy. There's all kind of things I could talk about fun. I could talk about fun for 2 hours. There's all kind of nuance to it. But let's go to the next thing. The other main thrust is this thing I call side door motivation. And that is creating passion and inspiration and motivation by attending motivational events. You want to be a marine biologist? Put that textbook down and go to the Monterey Aquarium. You want to be a country western star? Stop doing circles of fists and chromatic scales and go watch Taylor Swift perform. Go watch Kenny Chesney. You want to know what music's all about? Go listen to the Beatles or the Beach Boys or Billy Joel or Huey Lewis in the News. You want to be a tennis player? Go watch Alex Almeida or Roger Federer or Rod Laver or Jimmy Connors or the Bryan Brothers. You got to be motivated by seeing it at the top level. It's not about drudgery. It's not about hard work. It's about enthusiasm, love, and passion. And this is what I say to my friends at the USTA Player Development Program. It's not about grind and hard-nosed. And all. It's about playing out of sheer joy, passion, love, making friends. Traveling with a group. All the great lessons of life are learned through this great sport, if you love it.
Okay, so I would like to, in 3 minutes, wait, no, we have 9 minutes. I'd like to have 4 more questions. You think we can do it?
Yes.
Okay. Now, you run into, I call the horrible juniors and parents, I call them robots, because they don't have that enthusiasm. They're doing the grind. When you're the good, fun people, how do you deal with the robots that you encounter out there?
Well, I mean, I don't just force my philosophy on anybody. If they want to ask me to come and speak, I'll speak. If they want to read my book, I'm happy to have them read it. I might give them a little tip or two along. I hate to see kids forced to play, play under pressure, having various forms of abuse. I think, truthfully, most tennis parents are good. They're better than hockey parents or Little League baseball parents or so forth and so on. Not every parent is perfect. In my program at the club I was in for 26 years, I spent plenty of time each and every week working with the parents. We had a fireside chat for 15 minutes after every clinic we had, and I always had the parents there. I spoke to the kids, and I spoke to the parents. After a tennis match, a child is lost sitting on the curb with tears streaming down their face. They lost 7-5 in the third, and here comes that parent or coach with that yellow legal pad and said, "Joey, at 4 on the third, you went cross court. You should have gone down the line." That isn't how you approach the kid. You give them love and empathy. I always only let my parents ask 3 questions after a match. If the child came up to them, they could say, "You want water or Gatorade? You want Chinese, Mexican, or Italian? And do you want to drive or do you want me to drive?" If the kid was under 16, you only got 2 questions.
Okay. Next question. All right. So this is from Marty Collins, one of my NorCal buds, and he has started a Facebook page for NorCal parents as an exchange. So he's somebody who's very much interested in conveying notions to people and getting tough questions answered and all that stuff. So I appreciate him a lot. So
good for Marty for doing that. It's needed. Parents need just as much education as the kids.
Well, he's a great guy. And so, you know, his question has to do with understanding better the concept of 6 is Jump Street, you know, and and the all-time low in 10 and under players? You know, I mean, is there, where can we find that data? And can you explain the critical nature of getting kids started before age 10?
Well, Kurt is the master camperman of doing all this research, and it's his own research that we're at an all-time low this year for under 10s. I tell the USTA, take a look in the mirror. You're the ones doing all these programs. You're going about it wrong. That's why it's down. There's lots of better ways to approach it than the way they're approaching it. That's what I say. And don't mandate this under 10 baloney. Anyway, that's that. But, yes, Jump Street is six. When does T-ball start and softball and Little League and soccer and basketball? It starts at six. When do rodeo stars start riding? Not at 10. They start at two. When is Michaela Bryan pushing the tennis ball around? 15 months. When is she sitting at the drums? Right now. Same on the keyboard. Her tunes aren't that good right now, I got to tell you, but it isn't that bad either. Jump Street is six for greatness, and don't tell anybody, but it's actually one. Do little crazy little things with balls and balloons and all kind of graduated, way more graduated than the USTA even understands with their balls. Is there stuff even before balls? So I'm a big believer in getting on it early. The greatest players I know, everybody on the tour, that's when they started at six. Has there ever been a player start at 10? Sure, there has. Pat always says, John McEnroe started at 10. John started at 10. John started at 10. Well, that's fine. He had a great deal of talent. It was a different era 30 years ago. I think you got to start early. When did Tiger Woods start? Yeah, right when he could walk. I'm a big believer. Jump Street is not under 10. That's too late. Jump Street is six, and don't tell anybody, it's actually one.
You know, Wayne, that's funny because you spurred me on here. My son's first word was actually ball. And when we were watching tennis on TV, Philip called tennis peat ball for a long time. Until he learned the word tennis because, you know, because mom likes peat, dad likes Agassi. So he was siding with mom on peat ball.
I love it. Michaela's first word is ba. I don't know what that means, but that's her first word, ba.
Okay. So, all right. Now, here, I just wanted to let you know something that happened, because I used to run a lot of tournaments for the USTA, and we did a thing where we made sure that every singles match was three sets. I was never going to do a 10-point tiebreaker for a third set. And then I also made it that doubles was required. If you signed up for our tournament, you signed up for both singles and doubles, but you could opt out of doubles. And so we got quite a few reluctant doubles players, and then what do you think happened by the end of the tournament? They loved the doubles, and they were so surprised. They had such a great time, even with a partner they got thrown together with.
Right? There's always more smiles on the doubles court. The thing that hurts doubles is some kids are shy about asking another kid to play. They don't know who they can get. I think if the tournament directors help kids get partners, let them enter later. If you have a two-weekend tournament, let them enter until Saturday night at 6. Let them enter and partner. Tournament together. The directors put them together. They will have a blast playing doubles. And you know what else? It rounds out skills. If Andy Roddick had played more doubles as a kid, he'd have made that backhand volley at Wimbledon. Not only does it round out skills, gives you better volleys, lobs, overheads, sharper returns, it also teaches an additional set of life lessons. You got to get along with somebody else in a high-pressure situation. Not only doubles for boys and girls, Bill, but I'm a big believer in more mixed doubles. Back in the day when I was coming along, there was always singles, doubles, and mixed. In World Team Tennis, we have mixed. There's all kind of additional life lessons in mixed doubles as well. And I could go into that. I could do a one-hour talk on the why mixed doubles is so great for our society.
You know what? We're done. Thank you so much for coming out. And I got to play this disclaimer because we filled up a whole hour. Thank you so much for coming out, all right?
Thanks, Bill. I'll see you at the Sacramento Capitals this summer. Everybody get my book on Tennis Warehouse. I've had a blast. Thanks for having me, Bill.
Opinions stated by various contributors to the UR Tennis Network and its programming